Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So this morning we will read Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 10, The Pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, and we will read verse 23. Evam Shipan Danushi Sanditam Utsusaraja Banam Savajram Iva Tadridayam Vithyubeda. So strik vamanda shamukaya napatad vimanad da heti jalpati jane sukrativa rikta. After thus rebuking Ravana, Lord Ramachandra fixed an arrow to his bow, aimed at Ravana, and released the arrow, which pierced Ravana's heart like a thunderbolt. Upon seeing this, Ravana's followers raised a tumultuous sound, crying, "Alas, alas, what has happened? What has happened?" As Ravana, vomiting blood from his 10 mouths, fell from his apron, just as a pious man falls to earth from the heavenly planets when the results of his pious activities are exhausted. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In Bhagavad Gita chapter 9 verse 21 it is said, Shile Puniya Marichalokam Vishanti. When the results of their pious activities are exhausted, those who have enjoyed in the heavenly planets fall again to earth. The fruit of activities of this material world is such that whether one acts piously or impiously, one must remain within the material world according to different conditions. For neither pious nor impious actions can relieve one from Maya's clutches of repeated birth and death. Somehow or other, Ravana was raised to an exalted position as the king of a great kingdom with all material opulences. But because of his sinful act of kidnapping Mother Sita, all the results of his pious activities were destroyed. If one offends an exalted person, especially the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one certainly becomes most abominable, bereft of the results of pious activities. Bereft of the results of pious activities, one must fall down like Ravana and other demons. It is therefore advised that one transcend both pious and impious activities and remain in the pure state of freedom from all designations. Sarvapadi Vidyamuktam Tatparatvena Nirvalam. When one is fixed in devotional service, he is above the material platform. On the material platform, there are higher and lower positions. But when one is above the material platform, he's always fixed in a spiritual position. Sagunan Samatityaitan, Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. Ravana, or those like him, may be very powerful and opulent in this material world, but theirs is not a secure position, because after all, they are bound by the results of their karma. Karmana daiva netrena. One should not forget that we are completely dependent on the laws of nature. Prakrite kriyamanani gunaisa karmani sarvasha ahankara vimudatma kart aham iti manyate. The bewildered spirit soul under the influence of the three modes of material nature thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by nature. Bhagavad Gita chapter 3 verse 27. One should not be proud of one's exalted position and act like Ravana, thinking oneself independent of material nature's laws. Let me read the verse again. It's a very dramatic verse. One of the most dramatic in the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. Evam shipam danushi sanditata utsasarja bhanam sabhadram eva tadridayam viveda so srik vamandashamukaya nyapatad vimanad daheti jalpati jane sukati varikta. After thus rebuking Ravana, Lord Ramachandra fixed an arrow to his bow, aimed at Ravana, and released the arrow, which pierced Ravana's heart like a thunderbolt. Upon seeing this, Ravana's followers raised a tumultuous sound, crying, "Alas, alas, what has happened? What has happened?" As Ravana, vomiting blood from his 10 mouths, fell from his airplane, just as a pious man falls to earth from the heavenly planets, when the results of his pious activities are exhausted. So, what do you think of that? Is that dramatic enough for today? Namah Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nera Vishesha Srinivani Pasthityade Shikarine Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasani Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna
Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Yes, well, that's a dramatic verse. Vomiting blood. Okay. It's dramatic enough. However, in Nectar of Devotion, we find there's an interesting little passage. I forget where exactly, but it's there in Nectar of Devotion, where there is a description of Lord Krishna fighting with and defeating Jalasandha on numerous, like maybe 18 occasions, something like that. And the description there is that Jalasandha had some huge army of millions, something, a very vast number. And Lord Krishna, there was this Lord Krishna, Lord Balaram, and a handful of others. Really, not hundreds even, what to speak of millions, but really much less. But the description is that Lord Krishna and Balaram and their very small group of warriors killed all the warriors of Jarasandha, every single one. And there was just a river of blood, Haribo. And Lord Krishna's army, no one received a scratch in this very violent battle. And Prabhupada makes the point that those who are weak-hearted, when they read about this, they may become a little perturbed or disturbed or something. But he says, but those who are like heroes will relish it. So that's all of you devotees. And you too. It's nice, yeah? That's right. Yeah. No, Lord will. Right, okay. So it's nice. The comparison to a pious person falling from the heavenly planets when the results of their pious activities are exhausted, because this is what happens. People achieve the higher, the heavenly planets because of their pious activities, but they're there, and even on this planet, which is far from heavenly, it's got some nicer places and some worse places. Mauritius is a somewhat nicer place, although I don't know if you're aware, when Prabhupada was here, Prabhupada compared Mauritius to Hawaii. You read about that?
Yes.
And Prabhupada said, Mauritius is not as nice as Hawaii. He didn't like all the black rock, you know. Anyway. So some places are nicer than others, and actually some places are quite unpleasant. And the people in some places are really quite unpleasant. Shri Ketan Prabhu was telling me yesterday, when he was a very new devotee, he traveled overland from India to, I think, Switzerland, mainly by bus. And when he was going through Pakistan and Afghanistan, and he's dressed as a devotee with shaved head and sikha and everything, and when he was going through Pakistan and Afghanistan, sometimes the people on the bus behind him, they'd pull on his sikha, and there would be murmurings in, you know, Urdu or whatever language they speak. They were not happy. In other words, it was dangerous. Vraj, Haribol, how are you? Have a seat. Sit down. Relax. Good boy. Oops, sorry. So some places are better, some are worse. Some people are better, some are worse. But in general, on this level, there's nothing, you know, really heavenly, so nice. And there's not so much, there's really nothing which is like totally hellish. Like if you read in the fifth canto about the hellish planets. And there are some artists that have painted paintings. They've painted paintings, their ideas of the hellish planets. Hieronymus Bosch. Not so much, but to some degree, Hieronymus Bosch and others showing ghastly scenes. You know, there's this fellow, what's his name? The Italian? Carapigliano? Anyway, he's like a super classical artist. Super classical. He was living whenever before. He only paints paintings of ghastly scenes. Sort of biblical scenes of someone, you know, very elegant. But the fellow just had his head cut off and his head is there. So it's not so good, it's not too bad. There is much, much better. And there's much, much worse within the material world. But in terms of people who they reach the heavenly planets due to their pious activities, when those pious activities run out, then all the good things in their life just run out. And we see here on this planet, there was a sort of the Shah of Iran, the last king of Iran, and he was ruling in great opulence, living in great opulence and great power over a whole country. But then, you know, the Muslims, anyway, Hare Krishna, let us not talk about the Muslims too much, but one could if one really wanted to. There are things to say about them. The sort of upsurge of Islam, it really gathered momentum, and he got kicked out. He had his own, I think, 747 aeroplane, at least some major aeroplane, with part of it set up for open heart surgery while flying. Talk about, you know, the Boy Scouts motto is be prepared. Talk about being prepared. But then he lost everything. And he went to America. He escaped to America. But then he just died in sort of, what would you say, just irrelevance. And these things happen to people. When this sort of thing happens, they exhaust their pious activities, and then they sort of fall off the edge into some just not nice situation at all. I may have mentioned, it really struck me. Some years ago, maybe 5 years ago, I read a story in some news thing. There was one man, he won the lottery in America, and he won more than, after tax, more than $100 million. It was really, talk about the result of some pious activity. So he gave up working, and he had a family, and they were just living like kings in like a palace with the most extravagant type of lifestyle. But then he got in, he was a laborer. He was not a real person of, you know, a more elevated type of character. He was just a sutra, basically. Just a factory worker type, without really much depth to his character. So he got into bad company, and he started drinking and associating with people like that, you know, those who really spend time in drinking houses. And he got into some argument with someone, and in a drunken condition, he killed the person. And therefore, he ended up in jail with a life sentence. And his wife had written this thing, which was in the newspaper telling the story. Not newspaper, but some news internet thing. And she said, you know, I wish he had never won the money. I wish we were just a simple working family like we had been before. Because now he was finished, his life was finished, he's locked up in jail, and it's just too bad. So like this, results of pious activities, then when they're finished, and then the results of impious activities sort of kick in, it can be just like dropping off a cliff. It doesn't have to be years of gradually things lessening. It can be just like, choop, gone, finished. That's life in the material world. And Prabhupada is comparing this, the destruction of Ravana, in those terms. There he was. Talk about, you know, $100 million. He had far more than that. Way, way, way. So many, probably incalculable times more than that. But then suddenly, bang, gone, finished. Because of his offense to Mother Sita. You know, there's an interesting little incident, or an interesting little perspective, really, on this exact situation here of Ravana being killed by Lord Ram. That Ravana, you know, he had kidnapped Sita. Actually, he had kidnapped many women. Many. It was, he was like a collector of women, literally. He was actually, he was a collector of women. So he kidnapped Sita, and because Sita, even compared to these other women who are all like heavenly ladies, you know, with all due respect, they're even much more beautiful than Miss Mauritius, whoever she may be. Yeah. So, now generally all these ladies were just totally exceptional in terms of physical appearance. And even in character, many of them were from different heavenly planets. But Sita was in a different category altogether, in all terms, including beauty. She's, as we were saying, is the Mahalakshmi, the great goddess of fortune. We have no real idea of what a woman looks like, but it's certainly just something most astonishing. And so Ravana was particularly attached to her. And Ravana, in his attachment to her, he was thinking of her all the time. He was like obsessed, completely obsessed, addicted to Sita. So he was just thinking of her, and so you could say, he was in Sita consciousness. And Sita is a transcendental personality, like the Lord. And transcendental personalities, when you think of them, or just when you speak their name or you talk about them, but in this case, when you just think of them, they are there. They are there because they are absolute persons, means or includes the idea they are not different from their names, their remembrance, their pictures. They're actually present when you think of them. So within his heart, Ravana was thinking of Sita. Constantly and like completely fixated, absolutely. Therefore, Lord Ram did not fire an arrow at his heart because Sita was there. He was firing arrows at Ravana's hands, if you're familiar with the story. And bang, 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 the heads were getting knocked off. But they're popping back again. And this is all what's happening here. Right now. And after a while, Ravana, you know, he's getting his heads knocked off and knocked off and knocked off. So they're all popping back again. And after a while, you know, his character as a Rakshasa is very prone to anger, violence. His Rakshasa nature, as Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita, very violent and, you know, like easily agitated. So he became really disturbed with Lord Ram, and he forgot Sita. Then Lord Ram, as described here, fired an arrow at his heart, because Sita had gone from his heart. Not just an arrow, but it was the Brahmastra weapon of Lord Brahma. And that was the end. When that arrow pierced his heart, as the verse says, like a thunderbolt, then that was the end of Ravana. En créole, au revoir. When? There's no permutation of au revoir. What do you say?
Bye bye.
Huh? Bye bye. All right. Bad Malenge. Bahut Bad Malenge. So there you go, that was it. And as described here, it's really interesting. I mean, it just struck me. Yes, it broke up. What was it? Some creams.
No.
This one.
This one.
Oh, this one. This one.
Liquid wash.
Okay, and some cream. All right. So let's see. What now? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I found it really interesting that in the Sanskrit, I mean, you may not be sort of familiar enough with these things. The last line, Daheti Jalpati Jane Sukrativa Rikta. Jalpati is, in the word to word, the term, the word roaring is used. In the translation, Prabhupada expresses it, his followers raise a tumultuous sound, crying, alas, alas. You may or may not know that in transcendental love of God, pure love for Krishna, sometimes the devotees talk in very extraordinary ways. And like even, you could say, somewhat mad ways. That, you know, they see a rain cloud. We don't really have such good candidates around. But, you know, when you get like a real serious rain cloud, it's very dark. It can be blackish or even blackish blue. A really heavy rain cloud. So when they see such a rain cloud, sometimes bridge busies, and particularly the gopis, they think it's Krishna. And so they call out, Krishna, Krishna, to the rain cloud. This is a form of speech in transcendental madness. And there are various types of speech in transcendental madness. And one of them is called Jalpati. Yeah. It means sort of incoherent yelling and screaming, but in love of God. here, these people, the followers of Ravana, they were doing Jalpati. They were doing Jalpati. The actual verse, Prabhupada says they were crying, "Alas, alas, what has happened, what has happened?" That's Prabhupada's expansion of the idea of Jalpati. But the specific words are not in the verse, but it's just that they did Jalpati. And that means they were saying things like, "Oh, alas, alas, what's happened? Oh, disaster. Oh." This is Jalpati on the mundane platform. But the residents of Vrindavan, the local Vrindavan, sometimes they get into some sort of condition when they say things like that in relation to Krishna. So anyway, the main point really, and Prabhupada emphasizes it, and we should really take note of it, it's just really so extremely important for our progress in Krishna consciousness and just our happiness in life. And even, I mean, happiness, but even just being able to deal with life without getting affected by life in the material world too much. Because you know what it's like. You know what it's like to some degree. Mauritius is not so bad. But some places, wow, they're really bad. You know, material life is so much worth avoiding. It's so worthwhile to get out of material life. But in order to do that, you know, to extricate oneself, it's not so easy. You don't just say, "Oh, you know," like you walk out of the house, you just walk out, close the door, and you're gone. So to get out of material life, it's not so easy that, "Oh, I'll just get out of material life," and away you go. Because we are attached, we are conditioned by many, not just years, but lifetimes of living in this material world and getting caught up in all different types of things which typically happen in the material world. So there's a saying, you may have heard, old habits die hard. Old habits die hard. I've mentioned before, I'm sure you've heard me, when I was young I was in a very sort of disinterested way studying philosophy in university. And one person I studied was a British philosopher, Bertrand Russell, and it's a bit of a long story. But he was, you know, this is more than 100 years ago. There was no television, there was not even radio. Anyway, the options in the evening, what to do with the family, were really much more limited than they are now. So he was a philosopher, but he was also a character. He was very clever. He was like an entertainer, philosopher. And he developed a following amongst people. Because he would speak philosophy, but in such an interesting and funny way. He became like a popular personality, sort of a little bit like the current day movie stars to some degree. And he became famous. Well, it became well known that he had a smoking habit. And he was struggling, he was trying to give it up. But he would relapse regularly. So one time he was being interviewed, and the interviewer was sort of joking with him and said, "Mr. Russell, Yeah, I know you've been trying to give up smoking. Do you have any advice for our audience, whatever the audience was? Do you have any advice? And Bertrand Russell said, oh, giving up smoking, sure, no problem, it's easy. I've done it many times. He was like that. He was clever. But also sort of like a demented material genius. Yeah. Okay, so where were we? Yeah. So the thing is, yeah, old habits die hard. Have you heard us tell the story of Srila Prabhupada traveling in first class in the aeroplane of Rajasthan? Anyway, in the aeroplane, front row. And in those days, you didn't have your little personal thing where you could choose what movie, if you want to watch whatever. There was just one big screen at the front. And there was Prabhupada just, literally about a meter or meter and a half away from this big screen. And it was a war movie, World War II, starring David Niven, who was in all the war movies, fighting and killing the Germans, the Jerrys. So, and Prabhupada's sitting there, and he's definitely not like watching the movie, but from time to time, you can't really avoid it when the situation's like that. So there's David Niven. He's going up the hill to attack the Jerrys, the bad guys who are up on top of the hill. So he's going up with his gun, and he's going up. And suddenly, bang! Oh! He got shot. Down on the ground. But he got up again. And now he's going back up the hill again. Yes, yes. But then again, oh! He's shot again. And he's down. But then he got up again. And again he's going up the hill. But then, oh! He's shot again. And in the middle of all this, Prabhupada dozed off. Just sort of, fell asleep a bit. And he woke up, like, 30 seconds later, he just sort of nodded off momentarily. So maybe 30 seconds later, he woke up. And what was there? There's David Niven. He's going up the hill again. And then again, oh, he's shot and he's down. And Prabhupada made this remark to his assistant who was sitting next to him in a very sort of dry British type of way. Prabhupada said, oh, not dead yet. Which you appreciate British humour. It's really very funny. Now you can get it. Just look on the internet and you'll find translations into what is really meant of British polite statements. But what they really mean. Like, oh, your visitors, unexpected visitors are leaving. Oh, come and visit us any time. That means, please don't come now. So there's all these types of statements. Oh, that's very interesting. what rubbish that is. All right. So that the point Prabhupada's getting into, and it's just a really important point, is that we have to extricate ourselves from the whole scenario, the whole way of life of material existence, which, like as stated here, in the case of Ravana, suddenly, just like that, his pious reactions just stopped. And his impious actions just came upon him like that in a matter of seconds, from extreme pious, you know, good situation to suddenly extreme bad situation. We need to get out of the whole cycle. And the Prabhupada goes to some pains to elaborate. It's not just bad things, just the bad reactions that we need to get free of. We've got to get free of the good ones too. Rise above the good ones. You know, common day people who are religious, in the vast majority of cases, they don't understand this point. They pray to God or Krishna or Allah or, you know, whoever, Ganesh or somebody, to help us escape the bad things. You know, please cure our sicknesses. Please help me get a better job. These sorts of things they pray for. Help us solve our legal problem. These things they pray for. But you don't find them praying generally that please save me from having too much money. You don't. But rather they'll pray, please let me have more money. Yeah? So, you see, it's a little subtle point, but it's such an important point. If you're attached to the good, you will become implicated in the bad. You cannot just have it one way. You cannot just have it one way. That I'll just have the good health, and I'll just have the lots of money, and I'll just never die. This sort of thing can't happen because it doesn't work. And you know the example I think that Prabhupada gave? Prabhupada gave the example of the coin. The coin has the head side and the tail side. Heads and tails. And, you know, so people flip a coin and while it's flipping, they say heads. And then, you know, if it comes down heads in some way, it's like, wow, great. If it had been tails, would have been bad. But the coin inevitably has both heads and both tails. Both heads and tails. And you cannot decide, I will only take the head side or the tail side. And I will not take the other side. You cannot do it. When you have the one, you have the other. And even if you try to, I suppose it's possible, to cut through the middle of the coin. So now you've only got, you know, Queen Elizabeth, right? You still have Queen Elizabeth here? On the coins? You don't. Really? Mr. Rangulam. And on the bottom side, I don't know what you've got, a dodo. So we don't want the dodo. We just want Mr. Rangulam or the queen. But when you cut through, so maybe you throw away the other side, but you have just created another other side. When you can't avoid it. If you've got the head side, you've got the tail side. Okay? Yes. It's just like that. That's material life. And it's easy to think we will give up the bad. Of course we'll give up the bad. But to give up the good, that's another thing. Talking about on the material level. Therefore, Prabhupada is emphasizing we have to give up both. We have to transcend the whole sphere of material existence, which means the good and the bad. So Prabhupada says, so the question is how to do that. And Prabhupada says, when one is fixed in devotional service, one is above the material platform. This is what we have to do. And when you come above the material platform, and therefore you're no longer affected by negativity, like Prahlad Maharaj was being harassed terribly by his father, he was unaffected. Didn't matter. So you have to become free from the elation and excitement when things are going nicely. And this happens with a devotee, because a devotee has a higher taste. So we have to do that, and that is done through engaging in devotional service. Then gradually, as you progress through devotional service, then not only do you see the bad things more clearly for what they are, and of course they're bad, but you also see the quote-unquote good, meaning materially good things, more clearly for what they are, that actually they're not so good. That actually they're a distraction from what is really good, which is the happiness of being engaged in Krishna's devotional service. So, therefore, we should understand like this. Our happiness and distress in material terms is just coming from our previous material activities. And, you know, it's just an ongoing thing. And you cannot find a position which is simply good on the material level. So therefore, we have to engage wholeheartedly in devotional service, beginning with chanting Hare Krishna, and then gradually come above that, the whole material realm. So we're unaffected by the bad, by the good, and just attached to Krishna and rendering service to Krishna. So, this we have to do. Okay? Radha Krishna? Not less than 6 rounds a day, right? Am I right, or... Good girl. She's a good one, actually. I've seen much worse. I can tell you that. I know, you know what, Radha Kripa? I know one girl in Joburg. Her name is Shreya. I don't know, did you ever meet them? Oh, you did. She's A. Are they friends? Shreya has been chanting 16 rounds a day for about 6 months. Anyway, we're not trying to pressurize you, but just carry on, you're doing nicely. And there's this, it's another bead bag. I have another bead bag I was just given with a picture of Giriraj, our Govardhan, painted by a girl who's 13 and who just got initiated. She's been chanting, did I mention the other day?
Yeah.
Oh, I did. Oh, okay, sorry. She's been chanting 16 rounds since 2014. Yeah, without fail, 16 rounds. Not bad, eh? She was 8. So, yeah, we have to actually, we need, there are different things we need to do. We need to chant Hare Krishna, but one thing we need to do, which we may not do so much, but we should do, you know, kind of as much as possible, we should pray to Krishna, please help me to get realization of what material life really is, so that in a real way I can turn my back on it, or just sort of, you know, extract myself from it, based on real understanding, and not necessarily just some emotion like, oh, it's so bad, oh. Because those types of emotions may not last. Because you get the bad and then you get the good reactions. It's a sort of a wave form, like a roller coaster. Yeah. Like, I don't know if you'll get this, but I think you may. You've heard of Rolls-Royce motor cars? There's a model. It is called the Rolls Canardly. You've never heard of it. You have heard of it.
You've seen it.
You've seen it?
Yes.
You sure?
Yes.
Okay. It rolls down the hills and Canardly get up the other side. That's a Rolls Canardly. But material life is like that. When you're on a roll, things are going well. Ah, but then, oh, you hit the other side. So we should pray to Krishna for that realization. You know, in English, this word realization is interesting in the sense that if you sort of analyze it, then it means, literally it's saying, real eyes. To make it real, that's a realization. It becomes real. It's not just an idea or a theory or something like that. It's real. Realization. And when you get, when things become real in your life, then it's much easier to sort of take stands in regard to them. Okay, Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Any comment or question? Yes.
Actually, quite some years ago, I was in a temple workshop, and there was one Maharaji there. I tried to accept a question, and she like sort of refused. And she said that, no, I want my children to read Krishna book, and I don't want to read the stories also, because they're so violent, like Krishna killing demons. And she preferred, like, you know, some pastimes without violence.
Some, yeah, some say like that. You know, the thing is, though, that in a certain sense, it's just a... It's a reflection of what goes on in the material world. And you cannot really protect the children or anyone from becoming exposed to these things. I mean, we've heard this point raised on a number of occasions before. It's understandable. Try and keep the children more in the mode of goodness or something like that. But the world being what it's like, computers being what they're like, television being what it's like, the other children being what they're like, you know, to keep them sort of cocooned, you could say, to such a degree that you can't do it. Even, you know, the classic story of Gautama Buddha, his father kept him like a prisoner, basically, in the palace. And he was never exposed to anything bad. Only good things. But then one day he went outside and he saw, you know, someone dying, someone in poverty, someone disturbed. Yeah. And it became an impetus. So at least here, you know, we've got Krishna. Krishna's there in the middle of it all. Krishna's the hero. Yeah. So in that way it's connected to reality, but it's giving a transcendental perspective to the reality. Otherwise, you know, utopian ideas, meaning material situation where everything is just wonderful, it's another illusion. It's another illusion. But, you know, having said that, she could read Nectar of Devotion. There's much less of that sort of thing. Although, you know, like I mentioned, the one. But there's much less of that sort of pastime. And there are many, many, there's so many pastimes in Nectar of Devotion. It's just really amazing. You heard of Krishna killing Putana? She said. Yeah. You're okay about it, right? Good. Is that okay? She was troubled by it.
Yeah.
Okay, that's all. Say to her.